Roxanne, go ahead and read off that sheet if you'd be so kind.
Okay, Roxanne Rogers, age 62, February 21st, 2020, Sebastopol, California, being interviewed by my friend Linda.
My name is Linda Albert, age 62. Today's date is February 21st, 2020. We are in Sebastopol, California, with my friend Roxanne.
Okay, so thank you, Linda, very much for coming and interviewing me. And I'm going to talk to you today about my faith story, starting with my childhood a little bit. I was raised in Napa, California, and I'm the youngest of five. And my parents were from Tennessee and Texas, respectively. We did not grow up with any faith, particularly. I think my mother had some exposure when she was in Tennessee, but my dad was a bit of an atheist. As the youngest of five, I tended to be bossed around by my sisters and my brothers, so I became independent and wandered around, visiting neighbors and finding whatever nature was around there and wandering in it. And then when I got a bike, I went in bigger circles. And bigger circles tends to be the theme of my life, I think. Anyway, also just wondered, I was kind of carried by songs a bit. There was a famous song everybody knows, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, that I loved. And I used to go to the local school and on the weekends and swing on the swings and go up, way up high, thinking maybe something would happen if I got up there, you know. Anyway, we moved around a bit, and so I didn't have a lot of friends, but I did continue to wonder, you know. I climbed trees, and when we moved to Rohnert Park, I rode my bike one time to my grandparents' house, hoping that I could go horse riding, and that didn't work out. But anyway, it was amazing that I found myself there, and my parents were alarmed when they realized I had gone that far. And anyway, when I got to in my adolescence, we had moved around a few times, and my parents had divorced. My older sisters had moved away, and it was a very difficult time for me, a very difficult adolescence because of the divorce and because my father had been a bit abusive, and my brother became a bit abusive, and he tried to get me into drugs as well. And it was a very difficult time. My mother was still working, and then she tended to go off and abandoned us a bit to visit her husband, or not husband to be, second husband to be in Sacramento, boyfriend at that time. And I was sort of floundering, but I found refuge in a lot of the folk songs of the time, the early 60s and later 60s, good old Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Water, James Taylor, You've Got a Friend, and I found solace in those songs, and there was just something speaking to me, and they upheld me. And so that was something that I just continued to wonder about God. And I think I had a friend in junior high school that told me something about God or Jesus, and I just thought it was ridiculous, and kind of actually teased her. And it wasn't very kind to her. But as I continued into my adolescence, it got kind of worse. And my mother moved away to Sacramento and I lived on my own for a while. And I had decided that I'd like to be a hippie when I grew up. And I hung out at this hippie house on Yohome Street in Napa. And it was called Yohome House. And sadly, I did drugs. And at one point I did some LSD and I thought I was really gonna lose my mind. And I went home to the room I was renting and a house where I paid rent by child support. This was when I was 15. And I, after I had kind of freaked out at the house and my boyfriend at the time, who was really into Van Morrison, and he just held me. He was really kind, and he just held me while I was really freaking out. And then finally I went home, as I said, and I cried out to the God that I did not believe was there. Mm. And even though there was speed in that drug, I fell asleep. And the next day, I would have made a relationship with God at that point if I had known how to do so. But I stopped doing drugs very much and moved to Sacramento with my mother. That I was not comfortable then because she was more involved with her boyfriend. And so I started developing a bit of an ulcer. When you're, by that time I was in my junior year of high school, and you know what it's like when you move around and you don't know people, and it can be really difficult in high school especially. So I was having this ulcer and just trying to figure out how to manage my life. And I thought about dropping out of high school because I wasn't doing that well. And I thought about moving back to Napa and to just live in the hippie house again. And work in the vineyards and tying vines or something like that, whatever that means. And then I went to visit Easter 1974. I went to visit Easter week, and I found a friend who had lived at the hippie house who was no longer there. And I asked about where she was, and they said, oh, she's become a Jesus freak. And a Christian. And I was like, what? She's crazy. So I went to visit her, and I was going to try and talk her out of it, you know, tell her she was crazy. And she just told me that Jesus loved me, God loved me. And I was like, nah, that can't be true. Why? You know, it's too good to be true. But she invited me to something on Easter Sunday in the park. And I would not have darkened the door of a church. But this was, as I say, in a park, open air place. And I thought, well, I could just, you know, watch, stay at a distance. So I went to that. And I could see that the people that were there, the young people that were there, loved each other. There was just a sense of this unconditional love, which I certainly didn't get from my hippie friends. You know, you needed to be cool to be loved. And I wasn't very cool. At least I didn't think I was. But anyway, I heard, you know, again, the message that God loves us and that Christ Jesus died on the cross for us. And I was like, what? I don't know. I don't know about this. But it was love that was drawing me. And there was a big man with a beard, and he asked people if they wanted to accept Christ to come forward. And I was like, no way, I wasn't going to do that. But it got me thinking. And I went back to Sacramento that evening. My mother came back to pick me up, and I just started thinking, what would it be like? Maybe it would be a good thing. I knew that my family would think I was nuts, and those friends that I had would think I was nuts. But I was just really curious. And so the Monday night following, I took that phone into my room. Remember those phones with the long cords before cordless phones? And I closed the door and I called my friend, and she was so glad that I called. And she had someone else who was older in the faith get on the phone with me and pray a very, very basic sinner's prayer. And I really wasn't entirely sure what I was doing. But after that, it was amazing. I had this sense of peace, and the nervous stomach that I had went away. Mm. And I was failing. I had been failing in school, especially in math and algebra. But I started understanding it, and I decided not to drop out of high school. I started doing really well. And from that point on, things changed very much in my life. And I decided to move in with the people in Napa, and then they moved over to Santa Rosa. And we lived, we had this communal living situation. There was about 50 of us living in what is now the Kids Street Learning Center. And I went to my final year of high school at Santa Rosa High School. And I said, as I said, I did well. And faith was, you know, my new foundation. Yes, we were kind of what was called the Jesus people. And that was really good to begin with. But as I found eventually, there were still things in my life that were unsettled from, you know, my childhood. And I was still a wanderer. And I moved to the Bay Area with a church plant at one point, but that really didn't work. And at this time, my older sister was living in Germany with her husband, who was an officer in the military. And she invited me to come over. And I had always dreamt of going to Europe, especially Scotland. I was really curious about Scotland and the British Isles. And I had read some books by an author named George MacDonald, and I was just really curious about that. But she was in Germany, and she invited me to come to Germany. So I, as an adventurous person, I got a one-way ticket to Germany, and I lived with her and her husband. Actually, it was above their apartment in a maid's room. And I got affiliated with some people who were a couple named Lou and Charles McCullough, who were missionaries to the military. They were from Alabama, and they were welcoming young people, especially the military people, single military, into their homes. And I was not in the military, but I was affiliated with it, setting up education with a college for the enlisted men. And I started going along to that, and I learned more and more about the Bible through them. And it was just a really wonderful time. It was a new foundation, learning about the scriptures in a different way than I had previously with Jesus' people. And then an opportunity came after 3 years to move to Scotland, which was the desire of my heart. And there had been a number of scriptures that had kind of guided me. And one of them was, delight yourself in the Lord, and he'll give you the desires of your heart. So living in Germany ended up being a desire of my heart because I was exploring Europe. But then here I was getting the desire of my heart to move to Scotland. And that was through a friend who was Scottish that I had met in Germany. And she had invited me to come over and stay with her and her mother. This was after 3 years of living, and I had finished a liberal arts degree through the college that I was working with. And so she invited me to come over and to work with a what was called the Redwoods Foundation. And they were through the church in Edinburgh, Edinburgh City Fellowship, and they had invited me to work with them. And that was just a miracle that that happened, because I had had no idea that it would open up like that. Mm-hmm. So I went to Edinburgh after 3 years. Do you want to ask me any questions at this time? Because I'm just kind of, as they would say in Scotland, I'm just sort of blathering on.
Oh, you're telling a wonderful story. I know as I've been listening, I've been thinking a wanderer, but a wanderer with an innate sense of direction, because it seems like you followed the directions home. And I touch my heart when I say that.
Yeah, I was following the desires of my heart. And I believe that, as I said, that verse, if you delight yourself in the Lord, he'll give you the desires of your heart. Oh, and I forgot to say that as I loved Scotland, I was born on St. Andrew's Day, November 30th. And I think, you know, being having the desire to live in Scotland was something that God put in my heart. So I worked with this Redwoods Caring Foundation, named after the Redwoods here in Sonoma County. And I believe that it was meant to be. But it wasn't easy. I had to learn a lot of things, like driving on the left side of the road and shopping for tea instead of coffee. And yeah, it was hard work. And during that time, I gained residency status in the UK. And I had also dreamt as a child as being being a teacher. And so I was encouraged to become a teacher. And I ended up, after 5 years and having that residency status, I qualified to go to university there, and I trained as a teacher. And after I taught there for 5 years in different schools, I had the desire to return here to Sonoma County and teach here. But I found that it really didn't work out. So then
coming back here,
I worked hard. I did the CBEST test. Mm-hmm. I started working towards teaching here, but teaching here was nothing like teaching in Scotland. I really liked the curriculum back there much more. But living in Scotland wasn't easy because the weather was quite harsh in the winter, and I ended up with seasonal adjustment disorder. But when I came back here, as I say, it didn't really work out. So I ended up, as I said, bigger and bigger circles. I ended up going back to Scotland and taught there again. But then in the summer, it was only substitute teaching, or what they called supply teaching. I was looking for more work in England, because England's summers are different than Scotland's, their teaching times. So I was invited to go to the United Arab Emirates by an agent. And I thought, where? I'd never been there, and I'd never even heard of it. But I did go there.
This is the part of your story that I know more well than
the first part.
Well, the continual moving about the globe, teaching.
Yeah. So going there was really one of my biggest adventures, because, as I said, I'd lived in Europe, and I'd explored Europe, and I had learned a bit of German. But going to the United Arab Emirates, I tried to learn some Arabic, and that was really difficult. But when I worked there as a teacher in a Muslim school, and I was really glad to do that, because I had no idea what it was like to, you know, what Muslims were like. And it was really an eye-opener. Hmm. But it was also very difficult because the weather was very harsh. It was also very humid, very, very hot and humid. And the infrastructure was not great. I mean, I didn't know my way around. And so you take a taxi and you think the taxis know where they're going. Well, they don't. They didn't at that time. So it was really kind of very challenging, really. But I made a great bond with my students. And they were all female students because they separate at the age that I was teaching, fifth grade. But it was a lovely bond. And I was able to, one of the things I feel I was gifted with was I continued to love music. Mm. And I'd learned some songs from a Scottish songwriter named Stephen Fishbacher, and named Fishy Music. So I taught the girls some lovely songs that had something to do with God. And it was just very open. It was, one of the songs was A Wonderful World, different than the one that we're familiar with. It was a Christian song, but just very general about the world. Anyway, I was only there for a few months because my brother, who was back here in Santa Rosa, and I think I missed out that when I was in my adolescence, one of the reasons it was so rough was because my brother broke his neck. Mm. And I ended up caring for him back in my adolescence. And that was a very rough thing to do. And he had been a quadriplegic for 32 years. When at this time, when I was in the United Arab Emirates, he was dying of cancer. And so I had to cut short my time of teaching and come back here. And that was a really difficult flight, uprooting myself and saying goodbye to the girls who I tried, when I went in to tell them I was leaving, I tried not to cry, but I did cry. And so they were crying. So I had to leave the room while they were crying. And that was very upsetting. And then the flight, it was a long flight, you can imagine. And I knew I wouldn't come back because by that time my mother was a widow and I knew she was going to need my support after my brother died. So I got back here just in the nick of time to say goodbye to him. He was on hospice at that time and a wonderful hard thing happened when we took turns, my sisters and I, of being with him. And this song came on the radio, which was a song you wouldn't expect to hear on the regular radio, called I Can Only Imagine. Mm. And he had, at one point in his life, also accepted Christ and been baptized, complete water baptism, as a quadriplegic, 6'2" quadriplegic. It was pretty amazing. Yeah. Amazing. And it had changed his life. Sadly, he did not stay in that, and he continued to kind of not have the best life. He had a very sad life. But at the end of his life, I think he cried out to God again. And this song came on the radio while I was in my last shift with him. I Can Only Imagine. And that was a beautiful song. And I believe that his life did not end, that there is eternal life. And I believe that because of that, he you know, had a different ending. Mm-hmm. Well, after that, I stayed with my mother for a few months just to comfort her and had Christmas with her. But then I still longed to teach, and I couldn't get a job teaching here. So I heard about a job at an international school in Mexico City. And I ended up interviewing for that job on the phone, and consequently because it was on the phone, I had the nice interview in my pajamas. And so I went to Mexico, lived in Mexico, Mexico City, teaching at an international school there, and interacted with bilingual students, teaching in English, of course, and had an opportunity to go to an orphanage there and work with some children, and also using these fishy music songs, both with my class and then with at the orphanage.
So was it with the international school that you worked in Mexico and in the Southeast Asia? And
they were different schools. There are international schools that are bilingual all over the world.
So what was your, where did you go from Mexico?
In Mexico, it was an international school called El Edron, the Edron Academy. And I did a contract there for a year and a half in Mexico City. Then I went to Guadalajara and worked with a Christian school named the Lincoln School. And then I also went to, ended up after that, I decided to teach ESL as a change. So I went to, it's a long story how I ended up there, but I was invited to work at a university in Oaxaca, Mexico. So that was a really wonderful experience. I was La Única Gringa in a small town called Teotitlan de Flores Magan in the state of Oaxaca, northern Oaxaca. And I did that for, you know, about a year or so. But during that time, my mother passed away. And that was very traumatic. I came back up here to Santa Rosa for just that week to be for her, you know, her funeral, her passing. And God gave me the grace to speak at her funeral, the celebration of her life. And yeah, as I say, I managed to speak, and that was a very hard thing to do, but I did. And then after that, I did go back to Oaxaca and finished teaching there. And then I ended up, when I, while I was there, I did my grieving. You know, it's a very hard thing to lose a parent with whom I had become much closer by that time. You know, we had reunited when I lived in Scotland. She had come to visit many times and for my graduation from the university. So we were friends, and she had come to Mexico as well. So from that point on, when I was in Mexico, I did my grieving, and I decided to come back to California. And I went back, I came, well, I thought I would go somewhere different in California. So I went to San Diego, and I ended up teaching ESL in San Diego with San Diego Community Education, and I also worked at a church with some refugees who were from different places. And at that point, I worked for a while with this church, but then I didn't have a job with them after a while. I was let go because it was 2007 when there was a recession, or 2008. So I ended up working in, I ended up investigating a job in South Korea. And it was called the English, well, it wasn't just an English school, but it was a village, the English village in South Korea, in a place called Daegu, not a lot of people have heard of Daegu. And this place called the English Village had an airplane parked out in front, a real airplane. And inside, they had lots of rooms that were made to look like American, it was based on Disneyland, American or English stores, post office, police office, police station, stores, and they all were, they had English teachers in them. So when the students would come, like 50 at a time, they would wander around and experiment with, you know, kind of play English. Well, I was also teaching in a part of it that was called the school, and I was teaching art. But this, when the students came in, they were only coming one group at a time, and then they moved on. And so I didn't get to know them. I didn't get to have a relationship with them. So basically, it wasn't working out. And I was really, actually, to be honest, I got depressed. It was very cold there. And we had to eat Korean food, which was not that easy to digest for me. And so I got very depressed. And one of the things that happened was I just called out to God, and I just wondered what to do. And then we had a time when we didn't have any students at all. So I just had always longed to go to Thailand. And I felt inspired to just go to Thailand. And to be perfectly honest, I thought, this is just crazy, you know. But I felt inspired to do it. So I took a one-way flight to Bangkok. And when I got to Bangkok, it was just amazing. God led me to a place to live and a lady that spoke English that helped me through a B&B. And then I found this wonderful church called Christ Church. And there were people, it was an Anglican church, and there were people from all different countries there. And so I started looking for work there, and God opened doors for me to work first at a preschool teaching English, and then at another bilingual school
teaching. And then was it from Thailand that you went to Kazakhstan?
No, that's a little bit more complicated. I was there for a while, and I did do a contract with a bilingual school teaching English, teaching in English. And it was a good experience teaching with them. And it was a good experience living in Bangkok. But then I felt I should go back to San Diego. And from San Diego, I was settling into teaching ESL again, but it wasn't really working out because San Diego is very expensive. So, you know, obviously I prayed about what to do. And then I found an organization. I thought I would go back to teaching in English with bilingual schools. And I found an organization that had a school offered in a place near in the southeast area of it was near Malaysia, like. And I went to an interview. Oh, and then they changed on the phone. They said, no, we need you to go to the Ukraine. So I went to an interview in Los Angeles for a job in Ukraine. But while I was speaking to the interviewer, he said, no, we need you to go to Kazakhstan. And I was like, where's Kazakhstan? But I had this gut feeling that it was going to be in somewhere, someplace really cold.
Mm.
This is the middle of the year. And they needed someone to go there. So it's kind of a long story, but I ended up going to Kazakhstan. And that was a very good experience as well. And I said to them that I wouldn't go unless I could bring my dog. So I ended up bringing my dog to Kazakhstan in the middle of winter and teaching at an international school with kids from 25 different nationalities. And again, I was able to do my music, this fishy music, and put on a concert, a big concert with these Kazakh people and kids from all over.
So as I listen, Roxanne, I hear a real common thread of wandering the globe.
Yes.
With purpose. I hear, you know, that common thread of teaching.
Yeah.
Of music and of God being with you as you went.
Yes.
Opening doors and closing doors. What would you say was the most profound spiritual moment of your life?
Well, that would have to be going back to when I was 16 and I accepted Christ, because my life just changed from that moment. And I had peace, and I was able to complete my education. And if I hadn't completed my education, I would never have been able to become a teacher.
Right, yeah. And a girl struggling with school and ending up being a lifetime teacher.
Yes, and that was just the most wonderful thing. I love teaching, and I miss teaching.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because after Kazakhstan, that's when you came back to the United States,
that's
to California,
right,
for this, the remainder.
I came back to Napa. I wanted to be in a clean air environment again. And I ended up working with Napa Junior College teaching ESL. And not long after that, I ended up moving over here and doing a number of jobs. And it was around that time that I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer out of the blue. And I had to then think about my relationship with God in a different way. And I had to evaluate, if God really loves me, why is he allowing me to suffer in this way? And that's another story. I'm not sure we have time for that story, but I did learn that God still loves us, even when he allows us to suffer. And the most important thing is relating to God and becoming more like Christ. And I believe that suffering is part of the way that he allows us to become like Christ.
Anything in closing? Any last words? Anything else in closing? Any last words?
Well, I would just reiterate that although I am dealing with stage 4 cancer and I'm on hospice now, there is still joy in my life and peace, and I'm still excited to be walking on a journey with God now. My journey is no longer in geographical circles, but more spiritual explorations. Into a deeper relationship with God through Christ. And as you know, Linda, every day is a new beginning, and we begin again every day. And God holds us. I know that God is holding me as I go into, you know, I may or may not be healed of cancer, and I, you know, may get worse. But I know that God will be right here with me every day, every moment. And that releases me from fear of suffering, fear of death. Know that he will help me. Mm-hmm. He is my strength. And I have many other verses that have guided me all along. And so I'm honored and grateful to have been able to have this interview.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
went by so